This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. There has been much talk about whether cell phones may have some deleterious effect on our brains from the radio waves coming out of the antenna being held right up against your head. Well, studies have gone back and forth on whether or not cell phone use could be a health risk, with the most in the industry saying that it has no proven ill effects. Just this week, a study published in the journal Bioelectromagnetics reported no statistically significant change in the incidence of brain cancers in men and women in England between 1998 and 2007, a time when cell phone use increased dramatically. But now, new work published this week in the Journal of the American Medical Association says there is an identifiable effect of cell phone use in the brain, but it's really too early to tell what, if anything, that effect means health-wise. Joining me now to talk about it is Dr. Nora Volkov. She's director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse at the NIH and one of the authors of the JAMA paper. Welcome back to Science Friday.
Thanks for having me here. How are you?
How are you?
I'm good. And you?
I'm fine. Can you tell us what actually was seen happening in the brain?
Well, the study was done to try to answer that question. Is the human brain sensitive or not to the weak electromagnetic radiation that is delivered from cell phones when you place them by the side of your ear? And we use positron emission tomography to measure brain glucose metabolism, which serves as an indicator of brain function because when the brain is activated, glucose metabolism goes up. And what we found was when we compared images of the brain when subjects had their cell phones, their right cell phone activated, versus when they had the cell phones unactivated, there was a significant increase in brain glucose metabolism in the area of the brain near the antenna, which indicates that, indeed, the human brain is sensitive to the electromagnetic radiation emitted from cell phones.
Mm-hmm. So you've seen the glucose activity, meaning something is happening, but you don't know what is happening.
What we don't know, first of all, we do not know what is the mechanism that is leading to the increase in glucose consumption, glucose metabolism. We interpret it to mean that the brain is activated because that's what happens when cells are activated. They increase the consumption of glucose. But how is that brought about? There's been a lot of controversy, for example, of whether cell phones could increase temperature of the brain, which in turn could affect energy requirements. Alternatively, others have said, could it be that you are changing the electrical gradients across the membrane that make cells much more excitable, or whether you are disrupting blood-brain barrier? The mechanism, we do not know. And also, the other issue that we don't know, which is the one that has generated the most interest, is how does this relate, for example, to the question of whether cell phones have or don't have potential deleterious effects to the brain? And based on our study, which documents that it's sensitive, we really cannot infer whether this is a bad or could even have a potentially good application. So that our finding does not illuminate or enlighten that very important question of whether cell phone exposure could have detrimental effects. What it does tell, I mean, in looking at the data in my brain, certainly, is that we do have the obligation to evaluate whether there are long-term consequences from this exposure to electromagnetic radiation or not. But we need to evaluate it in such a way as to be able to answer this question.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. We're talking with Dr. Nora Volkov of the National Institutes of Health. You can also tweet us at SciFry, at SCIFRI. And Dr. Volkov, it's interesting that you say, I hear you saying, we need to have now further studies to find out what's going on there.
Yes, indeed. And I think that we need to me, the most important one, and that's the one that we as a research team would like to pursue, is what are the consequences of repeated stimulation of this type into the brain, say after 10, 15 years? Are there long-lasting changes? Or is this just an acute effect that once a cell phone exposure is interrupted, it has no consequences at all? So, and there are no answers for that particular question. We do not know.
How long, just in your study, how long was the cell phone exposed? Did people have the cell phone up to the ears?
50 minutes.
50 minutes.
50.
50 minutes. And did the effect go away immediately when the cell phone was removed?
Well, we didn't study that because the way that we conducted the study, we only get one measurement. Mm-hmm. So the measurement was being done the last 20. So the cell phone was activated 30 minutes before we injected the radioactive glucose, and then it was continued for 20 minutes. So what we actually saw in terms of brain glucose metabolism was what the effects of having the cell phone stimulating your brain. And but it would be, of course, very interesting to evaluate, say, for example, 10 or 15 minutes. Has metabolism go back to its previous state, or does it stay activated for a longer period of time? Unfortunately, our study cannot answer that question.
And but you're saying those are the kinds of studies that need to be now started.
Or no, absolutely, and I mean, even if it's, say, for example, stays, I put my cell phone and I get activated for 2 or 3 hours after it discontinues. Suppose I'm fantasizing that that's what happens, because I don't know if it does or if it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But the issue that to me is interesting, but the most important question is, does it start to change the way that the brain functions in ways that it does not recover? That is, to me, the question that would worry me if there is a long-lasting effect that persists after the exposure has long gone in ways that could be detrimental to the function of the brain. And that there is no data to indicate that that is the case, but also there's no data to indicate to us that we have evidence that that's not going to happen. And those studies should be done.
How would you do that? What would the protocol be like? Would you follow the same people, or do you just do sort of a population-wide study?
It's a very difficult study to do, and I think that in your question you're already hinting at that. First of all, you're not going to be able to do a randomized trial, which is the ideal experimental protocol to address if there are differences between metabolism in subjects that you're following prospectively that are exposed versus those that are not. That is a very unrealistic study. Nonetheless, within the constraints that one has, certainly you would like to, for example, ideally be able to do a prospective study that follows individuals at one point in time in terms, for example, of brain glucose metabolism or activation patterns using other technologies, and then you follow them and assess if the areas of the brain which are the ones that receiving the highest amount of electromagnetic radiation and do show the changes versus a control area that's far away. And this is actually plausible for two things. One of them is we all tend to use our cell phones in general on the same side of the head, and we all tend to use it as to place the upper part in our ear and the lower part towards our mouth. So based on the cell phone model that you're using, you can very much estimate where the antenna is located and which are the areas that are going to be affected. Mm-hmm. So one could take that difference, for example, of laterality and of placement within the brain in a prospective design. It's not trivial because cell phone technology changes. And one of the things, for example, that in the meantime people say, well, how are you using this information to give recommendations to others? Is it of any value? And I said, well, it obviously will depend on the degree of uncertainty that you're willing to take. I'm very conservative with uncertainty on my brain, but that's my own neurosis. So well, I, as a result of this, I do use an earpiece that I attach to the cell phone, or I use the speakerphone. And this, to me, is such a trivial solution. So yeah. I say, well, why not? It allows me to keep on using my cell phone. And at the same time, it deals with my neurosis of being unable to really tolerate the notion that there could be any deleterious action. I'm neurotic.
Well, we all are. And, you know, let me just think outside the box for a second with you here, if you'll indulge me. Let's say you had a device. It's not a cell phone. You had a device, and you were a company that made medical devices, and you had a device that you put up to someone's ear, and it stimulated some change in the brain, and you can show that there was a change in the brain, and you wanted to market this device. Wouldn't you have to prove to the FDA or whoever it is, the Consumer Product Safety Division, that whatever device was creating this change in your brain had to be safe before you could market it?
Yes, you have to prove that the device is not going to cause damage to your patients, just like you do also, of course, for medication. The issue that becomes more problematic is you design trials to try to address that question within a certain period of time. So say, for example, that I do have a device, and I think that if there is evidence that this weak electromagnetic radiation does not have any untoward effects, I think it is a valid question to try to do research to determine if there are potential therapeutic applications. But so if I do a study and I follow my subject, say, for example, for 12 months or 24 months, does that really answer the question properly? And it may be that it's not until I have followed them for 5 or 10 years,
right,
as the brain becomes also older, because what you may not see in a young brain that has much more resilience may become much more sensitive as the individual becomes older and has a cumulative effect from the exposure to that particular device.
I guess what I'm asking is, if you have discovered that there is a device that affects the functioning of your brain, and we don't know how that effect really is over the long term, isn't it up to the people who make the device, because it does affect our brain like it would be any other medical device, to first prove before they can sell it to me that it doesn't have any deleterious effect?
But right now, someone that is in the manufacturing company could come to you and say, prove to me that there's any harmful effects of cell phones. The cell phone technology has exploded, and there's really no clear-cut evidence of any harmful effects. And if there were harmful effects, because there are so many people exposed to it, it could have already become evident. So when you are in that paradigm where you can never completely rule out on one way or the other, and again, this issue has been going back and forth with respect to whether cell phone exposures are safe or not. To me, and that's why I reiterate, our finding in no way clarifies that whole controversial issue, because activation of the brain in and of itself is not something negative. It's physiological. I am activating several areas of my brain. You want me to activate them because otherwise I wouldn't be functioning properly. I'm thinking what I'm going to tell you. And so my whole frontal cortex is probably using glucose metabolism. The areas of the brain, auditory cortex, are using glucose metabolism. So this, and probably increasing metabolism as much or perhaps even more in some instances to what we observe with the cell phone stimulation. The difference is that it's a physiological activation as opposed to what you see with a cell phone exposure. And we don't know, I mean, and we really literally do not know if this is in any way negative at all or not.
Mm-hmm. Let me just remind everybody that this is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday on NPR. Talking with Dr. Nora Volkoff. Sorry, doctor, to interrupt. Go ahead.
No problem. No. But I'm also listening very clearly to your question of, should manufacturers of technology not prove to us that they are safe? And again, this also depends on what are the threshold of safety and what are the regulations.
Yeah.
And I think that that this is going to, as a society, may force us to view what is it that's going to be acceptable in terms of risk for technology and what's unacceptable. Because let's take a car. I mean, cars kill is the number one cause of deaths among young people. Great technology. They are clear-cut risks, and yet we accept them. So I think that the issue here that is different is we don't understand, we don't really know that sense that this is a type of energy that we have not properly investigated with respect to consequences on the brain or perhaps even other tissues of our body.
And who should do the investigation? Should it be the cell phone companies or should it be the federal government, your division, doing that investigation?
If you are running a company and you have to basically get sufficient revenue in order to survive, you have to make decisions of what you are going to do in order to maximize your profits and minimize your risks. And you do realize that you want to have a safe product because otherwise that could kill you. So it's like anything else, making a balance. And that's where also the government has played an extraordinarily important role in providing the infrastructure to address research questions that pertain to the health of all of us. So I don't know that one could come up with a recipe of who should be responsible. Ultimately, I think both the companies as well as governments are responsible to provide with knowledge and information that can allow individuals to make decisions about what is healthy and what they should try to avoid.
As I said before, if you want to create a medical product or a drug or a product or something, don't you have to prove that it's safe before you can sell it, don't you?
Correct, and that's something that we're always – and you can have a medication. They prove that it's safe within, say, a trial that's done over 2 or 3 years later. And then they found 10 years later that when they look back, there's a much greater incidence of stroke. But stroke being such, in this case, a low frequency, you were not able to detect it during the first 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. So that's where you also see that it's not foolproof. I think that it's a system that helps, but we have to recognize also that there are limitations.
And so you come down on saying you're very conservative. I'm going to be wearing my Bluetooth instead of my cell phone on my ear.
I'm not saying Bluetooth. I'm saying
Do we know that Bluetooth is any better?
I don't know. That's why I don't know. And I'm using one of these wire earpiece.
So should we put a Bluetooth in the PET scanner?
Well, I think that is an important question. I mean, it depends which next question you want to answer.
Well, let's go with that one first. I have about a minute before the break. We'll continue it. But should we, since you put the cell phone in there, now should we try a Bluetooth and see what happens?
We could do the Bluetooth, or we could do the question you asked me. Well, once you interrupt the cell phone, how long does it take the brain to go back to normal? So which question do you think I want to jump into?
I don't know which one you want. I know that I think I'd like them all answered.
Me too. I do want them all, but I don't have all of the time of the world. So I have to make a decision of which one we're going to go next.
Well, and you have to decide what kind of money we can spend on that.
That's absolutely correct, all means.
So can you stay with us a few more minutes?
Yes.
All right. We're talking with Dr. Nora Volkow, who is working over there very hard at figuring out where the cell phones are, what they're doing in our brains. She's head of the National Institute on Drug Abuse at the NIH. 1-800-989-8255 will take some of your calls. You can tweet us at SciFry, at SCIFRI. Maybe, you want to not hook up that cell phone directly to your head and use an earpiece, a wired one, like Dr. Volkow is talking about, instead of a Bluetooth, which she's not convinced of quite yet either. We'll ask more after the break, so stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking with Dr. Nora Volkow. She's director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse at the NIH. One question for you, and then we'll get one from our audience. Why is the drug abuse division of NIH looking at cell phones?
Well, I'm an investigator, and so I've been studying the effects of drugs in the human brain for all of my professional career. And one of the technologies that we use in order to do so is magnetic resonance imaging. And magnetic resonance imaging, of course, relies on very potent magnets, stationary as well as fluctuating magnets. And I've been interested specifically to the question, do these magnetic fields affect the function of the brain? Is the instrument that we are using by itself affecting brain function? In a technology, we're trying to extract information directly about brain function. So for the past 15 years, we've been investigating the effects of magnetic radiation and exposure into brain metabolic activity. And we've shown, this was a recent study, that when we did place the subjects in the magnet and we used the gradient coils, which are shifting gradients back, magnetic fields back and forth, we produce a significant change in brain glucose metabolism. And so when we had those results, immediately the question that emerged is, if that is the case, could there also be an effect from exposure to the electromagnetic radiation from cell phones? So we came at it very indirectly by trying to understand whether the tools that we were using to study the human brain by themselves could affect functional signals. And we did document that shifts in magnetic fields can produce, evidently by producing electrical gradients and electrical currents in the brain, which, after all, cells communicate with one another by passing electrical currents. if we because we showed that it could affect brain glucose metabolism, then that led to that question. Well, what about cell phones?
Well, it looks like you took the initiative on this thing. So where will you go next?
Well, I'm starting from substance use disorders, trying to understand how they affect the brain, and now I'm faced with this finding, which always happens when you do research. You start with one question, and you end up with many more questions. But of the questions that I'm most interested is trying to figure out if there is a design that we can do realistically, that will not be incredibly expensive, that can address that very important question. Are there long-lasting consequences from exposure to these weak signals of electromagnetic radiation? I'd like to be able to answer that question in a way that is comprehensive and provides information that is useful.
Well, we welcome your results, Dr. Volkov, when you finish that study.
Yeah, me too. And it's not simple. Experimentally, as I say, it's going to be...
Well, maybe you should get the cell phone companies to pitch in with you here.
No, it will be conflict of interest.
Yeah. The drug companies always study the drugs, right?
They do, but it's also very unclear. That has generated a lot of controversy of whether a study that is funded by a company that's producing that drug is as credible as one that is not funded by them, but it's completely independent.
I hear you. Well, we'll be rooting for you.
Well, thanks very much.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Volkov.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Dr. Nora Volkov is director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse at the NIH, and we'll see how far she can get in finding out how persistent those changes in the brain are.